All right, and we're talking with Karen Crisis of Gospel of the Witches.
Hello.
Hello, Karen.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
So now is the band Karen Crisis's Gospel of the Witches, or is it just Gospel of the Witches?
Well, we set the name as Karen Crisis's Gospel of the Witches for a couple of reasons. One, so people who had followed me before would know where I am now. But also, as an interesting aside, there is a book out there called Gospel of the Witches by Charles Leland about Aradia. And it's a documentation, it's supposed to be a documentation of who she is and some information about Italian witchcraft from the past. But it was very interesting. I had told you before that I had had an experience in Italy where I met this spirit named Aradia, this ancient witch who she told me who she was over a period of time and began teaching me about Italian witchcraft and the history there and a lot of what went on in southern Italy. And I didn't know anything about witchcraft at the time that I met her. My mediumship was growing and I was learning how to train and as a medium at that time. So it was not difficult for me to communicate with her, but I didn't know anything about what she was telling me. So when I would go research these things, one of the things she pointed out to me was that this book that he wrote was full of a lot of misinformation and was tainted with a lot of the sort of smear campaign that the church started in Italy back then against wise women and healers and seers who they called witches. So she wanted me to understand that a lot of that was about low magic, natural magic, a lot of it was folklore and legends and things that weren't true. So, you know, part of my opportunity with Gospel of the Witches is to, for anyone who's interested, share some of the things that I've learned. So there's an educational opportunity there to shed the light on some of that history. So I wanted to, for people to make sure who may have known that book that, you know, that's not necessarily a truth that she agrees with. There's more to the story. So it was a couple of ways to start a conversation, like here's where I am now as an artist. And here's where we can keep talking about this body of ancient information.
Okay, now, is the whole album based off of that?
Well, the whole album really was about my spiritual journey that was very unexpected in my life and the course that it took. When I started working on this album with Davide, I just began going through a lot of these changes in 2008. And although I was very aware that, you know, my spirit guide at the time and everyone she was introducing me to from the spirit world were from Italy and other places in Europe, I thought once it came time to write the lyrics and deal with the concept that I would pay an honor and tribute to everything that these spirit people were teaching me about the old ways. And I thought, oh, well, I'm from America. It would make sense for me to start with a reference to Salem, Massachusetts, even though there is a Salem, an old Salem, North Carolina, where witches were burned as well. I thought that that's, as a title, I thought that was an appropriate place for me to start because I thought, oh, you know, even though she's Italian, it must be for me to learn the American history. That wasn't to be the case, but that was the starting point for the album, that writing that song and kind of using a point in history that a lot of people can relate to, whether they know everything that happened or not.
And there weren't actually any witches burned in Salem, Massachusetts.
And actually, it's true, too, because in southern Italy, there's a place known still called Benevento that's like the city, one of the cities of the witches. And even though that's where a lot of the political upheaval happened, none of the witches were burned there. It's very interesting. And there are still, that whole town is still filled with seers and wise women and diviners who are, you know, from this ancient witch lineage. Of course, they use different terms for it. But somehow, a historian that I met online told me that witches were not burned there, even though it's considered to be like Salem, one of those places where a lot of witches were burned.
I had no idea about the North Carolina part.
I didn't either until we recorded there. You know, we recorded close by with Jamie King, and I had one day off, and Jamie said, you know, you should really go visit Old Salem. And I happened to have a friend named Eric who lived in the area, and we knew each other from the Crisis days, and he has a band called Feeding the Fire. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. a really awesome guy, great, super talented musician. So he came to pick me up and was like, let's go check it out. And Jamie had told me that actually witches were burned there. And it was very interesting walking around that place because I really felt like there were a lot of spirit people hanging out there who wanted to hide that kind of truth. We felt a very interesting vibe walking around in that area. Everything was closed for the day, but it looks kind of like back in time. There's a lot of mystery and secrecy going on in that little part of the town. There's a heavy, heavy vibration left there. But I didn't know about that either.
Wow. Okay. Now, you did this album, you crowdfunded a lot of it.
Yes.
And
go ahead.
Go on.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to know a little more about it, how it went. And
that was a really exciting thing because, you know, I hadn't made music in like 5 or 6 years at that time. And I thought about going through a label first. And then the impression that I got was that, you know, maybe the industry thought I didn't have any value at the time because my vocals can be a little bit of a challenge from a business standpoint. And I thought, I don't want to go into this mindset where I'm asking someone permission to make an album. I really want to feel creatively free and make all these choices business-wise and creatively from this place of love and creative expression. So once Davide and I had the concept and, you know, all fleshed out and the demo songs written and we were on a roll inviting musicians in, someone else had told me about crowdfunding and I thought, this could be the most amazing way to connect with the people who still email me and say, please make more music. And I was very aware that what I was doing now was very different from the past. So people may not like it who were very, holding on to the way Crisis sounded. So I figured, you know, make a little movie that talks about the philosophy behind the album, give some demo song ideas and some creative videos so that everyone knows as clearly as possible, this is where we are creatively now. And so it opened up this door of this line of communication for something new, heart to heart with fans, which is really exciting. We didn't raise all the money we needed to get everything done from start to finish, but we raised the most important chunk of money from the fans, which was getting everything done in studio with all the various musicians mixed and mastered, which was the big bulk of money. And it just so happened at that time, right when we started our crowdfunding campaign, that Marco Barbieri became the president of Century Media. Now, for people who don't know, Marco signed Crisis to Metal Blade in the early 90s. And it was very interesting that he came back to the music industry at that same time. So when I knew that we were going to need more money to get, you know, the albums and the CDs pressed and made and everything else like that done, I figured, why not reach out to him and see how he feels about this? And he really felt strongly about the material. And so the label became kind of our last funder. It was a precedent for Century Media. They haven't really dealt with any crowdfunding. And it gave all this artistic control. It remained in our hands, but we had the added bonus, of course, of having a real caring team behind us to do promotion and to do press and all sorts of other things, getting the band out there. So that ended up being also a very happy story.
I was wondering how you ended up on Century Media, because I knew you weren't necessarily looking for a label.
Right.
So who are the official members of the band?
So the official members of the band are, of course, Davide Tiso, who is our composer. He actually played all of the instruments except for drums and vocals on the album. Some people don't know that because there's a lot of names involved. So he recorded and wrote all of the guitars and the bass. Charlie Schmidt, who played on the album, is the live drummer as well. Ross Dolan, who backed me up on almost all the songs vocally, is the live bass player and vocalist from Immolation. And also Bob Vigna from Immolation is our second guitar player live, which is super exciting. And then there's myself on vocals. So we have a 5-piece band.
Okay, now is that lineup going to stay like that, or is it going to be something that... Okay,
no,
so when you go out on tour a year from now, it's going to be probably the same lineup.
Yeah, and we're already talking with those guys about the next album and, you know, gearing up to get them some demo tracks of the songs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's been a really exciting thing. And everyone feels really strongly about the music. In fact, you know, Bob made that video for The Alchemist that's out there now, and he's working on another one. And so everyone's had these really wonderful contributions as part of the band, which is really lovely.
Now, as far as lyrics go, you wrote everything?
Yes.
And did you write everything for Crisis, too, lyrically?
I did.
Okay. Now, Ifil Dwath, that's done, right?
That's done. And that was something different for me because I didn't write any of the vocal patterns or the lyrics. Davide had traditionally done that for his band, and I didn't really want to interfere with the relationship that that music had to its lyrical patterns. And I still felt so strongly connected to the music that, I wanted to fit in the way that I should appropriately fit into that music and not change it.
And it's interesting because although you have no one from this band in Crisis, it's still something about it still has a tiny residence of Crisis there other than your voice.
Oh, interesting.
At least I think so. I mean, it's a very diverse record. You got 13 tracks and they're very, very different from one another.
And there is a hidden track.
Like a song like Pillars really stands out from the others.
Yes, it does.
And what is that about?
Well, that's interesting, too. I think there are a couple of things that came into play with that standing out. Now, that started, of course, from all the guitars from Davide. And an interesting thing, if we're talking about Crisis versus Gospel of the Witches, is in Crisis, the guys would write the songs in rehearsal, jamming them out, working them out, and I would be listening and feeling my way through them, but I would write my lyrics and vocals very separate in my own space. And I would also write them in my mind. I didn't ever jam out the lyrics. I would hear everything create itself in my headspace, and then I would go sing it the way I heard it. But I noticed I really responded to the drums as a way to create my vocals almost like I was another percussive instrument. With Gospel of the Witches, there were no drums in the tracks Davide presented to me. It was all guitar layers. So I came at this project with a different vocal direction. You know, I wanted to have some really soaring kind of female melodic vocals that didn't change their textures, that remained there. And at the same time, I wanted to have these vocal passages that were almost like a choir, you know, where they were almost chanting or almost like mantras. And so I sort of became the rhythm section in the band by creating those vocal choruses and those dynamics. At the same time, that freed me up to have like very melodic vocals. So I came at this whole process musically in a different way. And so Pillars was one of those songs that was what I call around, where it's like this old classic idea of a music where the music is almost a loop that repeats itself, or you have a couple of loops together that almost build the emotional dynamic of the parts, and then they kind of come back to point A, and then they swirl up to point B and point C. So lyrically, the vocals kind of repeat themselves as a way too, and it's a song really about spiritual seeking. You know, when you sort of take that path and you want to find out what is behind the illusion, you have to first deal with the physical plane that we're on and try to figure out what is real and what is not real. And so I kind of started at that point lyrically talking about the body having its, and the physical world having its limitations, you know, kind of being a prison, if you will. So in order to get beyond the physical, you know, kind of have to look back past that illusion. And looking past that illusion, we see other things happening in terms of what illusions are still there. We can take ourselves to the other extreme and think, okay, on an energetic side of things, I can elevate myself to the point of being a goddess or an expression of that co-creative energy. But is that part of the illusion too? So the song is really taking, like you hear that there's those stages of grief. And, like when someone goes through a grieving process or someone's death, they say there's these stages of grief. And it's also the same way when you sort of like try to look out into the universe and find the greater truths out there. You have to go through these stages of letting go of the material, of the physical world, and looking into all those descriptions or those illusions that hold our mind back from seeing the greater expansive quality. So that's what those lyrics are really about.
Oh, okay. And you obviously designed the cover artwork.
I did. Originally, I wanted to use photos and combine some very strong graphic arts, but I couldn't quite make it happen. And Marco and Davide kept telling me, why don't you paint the cover? You're a painter. And so I finally said, I guess you're right. And I went for it and tried to capture what I had wanted to do photographically with an oil painting.
Yeah, and it looks amazing.
Well,
and
thank you.
It definitely represents, I think, the feel of the album very, very well.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Now, your vocals are still you, obviously, but they're not quite as extreme as the stuff you were doing in Crisis.
Absolutely. They are, I use a lot of my range, but not in the same short time period. And I really felt myself wanting to explore different parts of my vocals. And it was kind of exciting because in the past 7 years, I haven't really spent much time singing, but these different ranges that I didn't realize I had were coming out. And it feels really exciting as a singer to feel my voice working in those ways. It's less, if you want to say, schizophrenic than in the past.
Okay, all right. And I think, like I said, I don't think it's so far a departure that people who were used to Crisis would find it completely unfamiliar, but it's definitely not the bludgeoning sound that Crisis could have.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not someone who, I'm not a musician, so I can't necessarily dictate how music sounds, but when I had years ago, in 2008, decided that I was ready to make music again, I definitely sort of put it out there to the universe. I don't want to try to, I'm not the same person. The core of me is the same person, but I am not where I left off, you know, back at the beginning of 2006 when I left Crisis. And I don't want to try to, like, pick up where that ended. I think that's, you know, I'm really into growth and moving forward, and I don't want to try to repeat the past, and I don't want to try to recapture something. I want to express what I'm going through now. So it took a little bit of time to express that. And, of course, I think there's some recognizable qualities there, but it's definitely moved on from that. And I find myself in a new, exciting place musically, too. I feel a little more confident in myself as a musician.
Well, with all the mediumship and such, it seems like you're still you, but your experiences have changed so drastically from the time you were in Crisis to now.
Absolutely.
And that's obviously shows through in not only the music, but so many of the lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the wonderful things about Crisis was that I could try to, you know, transcend a lot of the pain and suffering I was going through the music. And that's where I would channel this empowering voice or ideas about the frustrating limitations I felt of the physical body and emotions and everything I was dealing with in there. It was a place where I could, you know, reveal the pain in my heart in a very raw kind of way. But not where I was wallowing in it. I was still trying to find the light in that darkness. But on a daily basis, I really felt overwhelmed by a lot of that. And now I still, of course, still living life. I can still see all aspects of things, but I'm touched by those things in different ways. And, of course, you know, mediumship is exciting because I can ask these deeper questions of the universe and all my different spirit guides and learn a lot more than I could have if I were still in that very dark, depressed state. There's still, you know, I still have questions. I'm still a seeker. I'm still not walking around in white robes saying that life is perfect. But I'm able to process my life experiences in a different way and learn a lot more from them. And that's what a lot of the lyrics celebrate.
Okay. Do you want to explain to people a little bit about the mediumship? I mean, if they want the long form, they can go to wheredidtheroadgo.com and look for the interview we did with you back in 2013.
Sure.
But if you want to explain a little for people who may be unfamiliar.
Sure. So mediumship is basically something that has been around since ancient times, and you have what we could call low or naturally formed versions of it and high educated or organized forms of mediumship. And what mediumship basically means is that on the planet, we have the ability through our psychic senses to communicate with people who are still living but are no longer in physical bodies. So that could be your grandma who just passed on or your friend. It could be people who have chosen to remain as teachers who have a lot more, you know, broad perspective wisdom like archangels and spirit guides, gods and goddesses, and onward. So in order to experience mediumship, you would have to, well, before I go into that part, I mean, mediumship does challenge a lot of people's beliefs on life, not just death, because, you know, there is the belief through demonstration and scientific testing that consciousness exists even though the physical body has passed on. And there are ways for people to train as mediums and do readings and give evidential information and be tested by perfect strangers to relay this information that they would never know just from their psychic senses or from being in the presence of a complete stranger. In terms of ancient times, that's something that you hear about people contacting their ancestors or channeling gods and goddesses. A lot of people find themselves naturally having experiences with the spirit world, like they can feel ghosts around them. They're not really sure what the ghosts are saying or what they want, but a lot of us have had experiences with them. And then there are people who have trained in this manner to know how to sort of dial the spirit telephone on a daily basis and discern with whom they're speaking and get information from their psychic senses in a more organized way rather than just waiting for those quote-unquote supernatural experiences to happen. So that's what I could say in a nutshell. If we look to the ancient past, there were a lot of, you know, the wise women, women who were labeled as witches. Those were a lot of natural mediums, women who were still communicating with their relatives, their ancestors, or gods and goddesses. There were people in ceremonial magic like druids, like the Essenes, like high priestesses who were very... they're aware that they were channeling information or healing energy from a very specific spirit teacher or master teacher so that other people could experience this spirit person through healing in their body or through messages or through technical information.
And this wasn't necessarily something you sought out. This was something that just happened to you early on.
Yeah, ever since I was a child. And, you know, it was something that I couldn't really talk to people about, something that scared my mother. So I didn't really talk about it for most of my life because, first of all, a lot of people who have these experiences happen naturally can relate. You don't always know what to do with them. For example, when I used to be able to see spirit people very clearly in the room, I could tell, like, what time period their clothing was from. I'd see groups of them. I didn't know how to talk to them or that I could. I just saw them staring at me. And it was very scary. You know, you're on a first date and there's a room full of ghosts looking at you. It's very uncomfortable. Or I would be able to hear spirit people and not know what to do. Or I could understand when I could see spirit attachments near people that were kind of frightening. You know, and I would have, or I would know from some spirit people information on how to heal a very serious illness. And I didn't have any technical medical knowledge of my own, and they would be right. I would be able to heal that illness. Or I would know, they would tell me when someone would be, who was going to die, was going to die. And so this was stuff that would happen. It was very clear in my mind or my visual plane. I was very aware that this was happening, but I didn't really know how to talk about it to anyone. I didn't know what to call it until I was much older. And then I also learned that I could learn to work with this and turn it on, turn it off, use it for specific things, and also how to teach other people how to use this information or this skill.
Okay, all right. And this, how much of an influence on this music would you say that has taken, like on a percentage scale?
It's a huge percentage because it's a part of my life that I finally accepted and integrated and said, okay, this is who I am. You know, I'm out of the medium closet. I'm out of the broom closet. You know, like, this is who I am. And I've accepted it, and I've, you know, devoted a large part of my life to working with this ability and, you know, serving others, learning more on my own, because learning never ends. That's what's exciting, and helping other people out. And this is, you know, the more I learned about how this whole system works, the more my own life made a lot more sense to me.
Now, there's probably going to be some people that give you a little pushback because of the content. Have you experienced that yet?
Not so far, but I certainly expect that. I certainly do. You know, for a lot of people, this, I'm sure, is a concept that's difficult to understand. For a lot of people, witches still have that resonance from the church that they're evil and dance with the devil. But, you know, it's an opportunity for conversation. It's an opportunity for education. And it's my passion. So I don't see any reason why to keep quiet about it anymore.
No, absolutely not. I'm just wondering also from the more materialistic side of things if people will be less eager to check it out because of the content.
Oh, sure, it's possible. You know, that's another thing where that was freeing for me is to stop worrying about how things will be perceived. You know, I've always had, no matter what I've done in crisis, my own sense of personal integrity. We all have different ideas of what that means, but I would try to stay true to my artistic vision. And now is the same thing. So, you know, I feel like I have to create from a place within myself, and where that journey is taking me. And, you know that you can't serve everyone's needs when you do that and not expect that everyone will love things. I've always been someone who's been a little bit controversial in music. Some people just absolutely hate my vocal style, or they hate my hair and they want to focus on my hair. And, you know, so there's always going to be someone saying something.
Oh, your hair is so much a part of the stage show. makes you seem 10 feet tall out there. So you have two shows coming up for this. Are these the first two shows you've played?
Yeah, these are the first two. And it'll be nice because it's right after the CD is technically released in the U.S.
Which is the 24th?
Right, the 24th. Okay. And then the shows are the 28th and the 29th. So that's a nice timing.
And you want to tell people a little bit about them?
Sure. March 28th is going to be in Clifton Park, New York, near Albany, and it's at a club called Trick Shots. There are three other bands playing that night. And then the night after, the 29th, in Brooklyn, New York, Gospel of the Witches is headlining that event, but it's a festival called Legacy of the Witch. So there will be other music, there will be art, performances, there will be speakers, Pamela Grossman speaking, I'm almost also speaking, about mediumship being the cornerstone of all the ancient religions out there. There are going to be people doing like tarot readings. There are going to be some performance art. So it's a festival celebrating, you know, witchcraft in modern times, which will be very interesting. And that will be at St. Vitus in Brooklyn.
Awesome. And you said you're working on a tour for the summer?
Yes, we're working on some more shows for the summer and then, you know, tours after that too. So I'm excited to get that underway.
Okay. And you said you're already working on the next record.
Yeah. As I said, David is a really prolific composer, so he already has material for the next two albums, but we're getting ready after March to start diving into those songs more deeply. I'm very excited.
Huh. All right. Well, that's really awesome. This one itself is over an hour long.
It is.
And it's already out in Europe. It came out March 9th in Europe.
It did.
And, it's out on Century Media. Oh, where can people find you online?
Currently, you can find us online on Facebook, Gospel of the Witches. So facebook.com/Gospel of the Witches. Pretty soon, I will have my Etsy shop connected to that with the new merchandise. We'll have t-shirts and more posters of the album artwork. And that's just KarenCrisis.etsy.com. So until we have the new website up, you can find on that Facebook page the videos, song links, because you can also just go to YouTube and search Karen Crisis's Gospel of the Witches if you wanted to hear a track called Mother or see a video track for the song The Alchemist.
Okay. And you're going to be doing some more video stuff as well?
Absolutely. More things coming up very soon.
And I do believe you told me one of the shows you're doing is going to be recorded as well?
I think the night at St. Vitus is going to be recorded.
Okay, is that going to, do you know if that's going to be available for people?
I think it is. The last I heard, it will be. I don't have the details, though, yes.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
I think that's about it now. For now, yes.
All right.